There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, you're banned.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Good afternoon, everyone. April Marie here, filling in for Sean Sullivan one more day this week as we head into weekends. For those of you gentlemen listening, if there is a lady in your life, this is your reminder. It is Valentine's Day. Okay? Don't drive the car off the road. Don't panic. You got some time. But don't go waiting till 5 o'clock p.m. to go to a store when shelves are empty. Hopefully you have pre-planned this. Maybe called one of 106.5's great advertisers to get something. But reminder, it is in fact Valentine's Day. I, in a genius move, and I'm not really sure why, my three children, their school decided that with Monday being a holiday, they were going to make today a teacher in service day. So we get we have a 4-day weekend over here. And I had my kids make their father Valentine's before he picked them up to take them to lunch so that I could spend these 2 hours with you. So you are my Valentine's. Thank you. I appreciate you giving me your afternoon. Okay. Also for the guys out there, and I know there are girls who are probably like, oh yeah, it snuck up on me too. I know that because it snuck up on me. I did not, otherwise I would have had the kids making Valentine's earlier this week, but nope, here we are. And I'm like, what? For those out there who are gift giving, but haven't thought of it yet, you don't have to go with traditional candy or jewelry or chocolates. You can give the special someone in your life something that's meaningful to them that is untraditional. You're not going to find on a, you know, commercial. There are all sorts of things out there. So get creative, show your love. And then for the men out there, I will say, beyond just February 14th, open your calendar, scroll through, find a random day, any random day, and then put a note in there to do something special for your loved ones. Because while getting Valentine's is nice, getting flowers or an I love you something or a gift, just because, you know, in April or May, that's pretty nice too. So throwing that out there. All right, got a great show lined up for today. If I do say so myself, there will be more ranting and raving when there will be more ranting and raving on the gun bills because I'm just fired up about it. There will also be two guests today. We'll have Kenneth Pascal. He is and I'm going to double check. I keep adding syllables for his name, Pascal. There you go. Kenneth Pascal he's a Shelby County legislator and lawmaker who we're going to talk to about a couple of his priorities for this legislative session. He'll be on in the next segment. And then later on about 1:15, we're going to have Chris Pringle, not to be confused with Sean Sullivan. So Dalton and I talked and I was like, yeah, I'm going to have Sean Sullivan on. And I was just trying to get everything ready before radio. And he was like, you're going to have Sean on Sean's show. And I was like, oh yeah, that's not who I'm having on at all. So we will in fact be having State Representative Chris Pringle, recently married, newlywed. For those of you who didn't know, I love to keep you guys posted on the happenings in Alabama in terms of romances and marriages, because I think the guys just ignore that, right? Like state representatives, the attorney general, people get married and the guys are like, meh. But I think it's important because those spouses need to be acknowledged. It's hard work being a spouse when your husband is constantly traveling all over the, you know, all over the place, and people have very strong opinions, whether they've met him or not. It's a cool job. So we'll have him on. I will try not to trap him into any new questions about how newlywed life is going. We are also going to talk, of course, because we couldn't get through 2 hours without it. What is going on in Trump's world, Trump administration, Trump appointments, some of the agency stuff? He has really caused a dust up by not allowing the Associated Press into events because he says he's a little miffed that they keep calling the Gulf of America the Gulf of Mexico. And it cracks me up. It absolutely cracks me up because I'm loving watching the leftist yell about compelled speech. Oh, compelled, you can't make us say it. Really? This is the same Associated Press that continues to say men are women, that has decided that when you talk about black people, you have to capitalize the B, but when you talk about white people, you don't. They have put all sorts of random restrictions intended to push a left-wing agenda on the country over the last 4 years. An AP style is a style that a lot of different organizations follow. And so when they decide we are going to use people's preferred names and preferred pronouns, whether they're they, them, or calling a man by she, her, when they do that, there are other agencies and other offices and all sorts of things that follow them. So they're getting a taste of their own medicine. And while I think the Associated Press, however left-leaning they have become, well, I think they do deserve a spot. I think this is utterly and completely hysterical. I am all for a little bit of pettiness for them, the leftists, them, the leftist media, the lamestream media, the bought and paid for media, for them to get a taste of what life has been like for conservatives in this country under their compelled speech rules, because that's what it is. We've got these media outlets who hopefully will think twice before they say birthing persons and chest feeders and act like, you know, being a woman just requires lipstick and high heels. It's frustrating. And while I think it's funny that Trump has decided to make it about the Gulf of America / Gulf of Mexico, the bigger entertaining portion of this is the meltdown occurring. All right, to the text line. I have the text line open today. If you guys are texters, you know how to reach me, and I'll be checking those messages throughout the afternoon. Let's see what we got going on here. Wally says, have a great show. And he's got me a little Charlie Brown, a little Snoopy going on. Daniel and Foley is saying hi. Chris doesn't want to talk to me. Apparently he wants to talk to Dalton. I don't know what's going on with that, but that's okay. It's just fine. Just fine. And Gary says, happy Valentine's Day. Happy Valentine's to you too, Gary. Again, I'm so excited to be here with you guys this afternoon. All right, we are going to take a break. Before we do, I want to remind you where you can find me online. April Marie, APRYLMARIE, will be coming back with Kenneth Pascal. He is a state lawmaker, and you're not going to miss what he has to say about protecting families, particularly fathers' rights. That's in just a minute. Stay tuned.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. April Marie here, filling in for Sean this wonderful Valentine's afternoon. I'm not sure what makes it so wonderful. Actually, again, I'm a change. Let me take that back. What makes it so wonderful is I get to be here with you guys, and I get some fantastic guests this afternoon. So it is, in fact, a wonderful Valentine's afternoon. Joining me this segment is State Representative Kenneth Pascal. Now, Kenneth and I met when I was stalking the halls of the state legislature, brand new, fresh to the state, didn't know a soul. And we were both kind of doing the same thing. We were advocating for things that mattered to us. I was, of course, there for just about any gun bills that was going through. I was paying attention to what was happening with our seniors. Now, I just had a handful of things that were important to me. And I love it when I see people there who don't have to be there, right? They're not getting paid, not the lobbyists or the government affairs law firms, but people who care. And that's what Kenneth was and is, even though now he's elected. Welcome to the program. It snuck up on me this year. I tell you what, I woke up this morning and I was like, oh, I should probably have the kids make their father a Valentine's Day card, because he came to take him to lunch so I could be here on the show this afternoon. We did. Let me double check here. It sounds like I might need to... let me double check that the listeners can hear you. We might have a hot mic issue here. I'm going to adjust this while we talk. The joy of live radio. Let's try that again. Let's see. Can you talk to me for just a second? And we will... Okay, I'm going to have to call him back because... it appears as though he, I lost him there when I was switching the thing. So we're going to roll on, and I'm going to give Kenneth a call back in just a minute. You guys bear with me. As I mentioned, this, he is not just a, he's not just a state rep. So many of the people that we elect, so many times the people that we elect, have just been doing this and use it as a career. He's not that guy. So we're going to get him back on the line here in a second and get you guys some sound. You got it, Dalton. I got this. All right. There you go. Dalton, you let me know if you can hear him, if you and the listeners can hear him this time around. And we'll get right into that interview and what's going on right there in the legislature. All right. Kenneth, are you there now? Okay. I think we are all set. I believe we have worked out the technical difficulties there. All right. April Marie here this afternoon, spending my Valentine's. okay, Kenneth, we're gonna call you back. All right, we're gonna get Kenneth on the line after this, and I'm gonna just work those kinks out during the next break. You guys, thank you for your patience with that. We're gonna roll right on into some of the other issues we've got while I figure out those technical difficulties.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right. See? Moving in a shaking here, giving Dalton heart attacks. You know, this is how I know, this is how I keep Dalton's heart going strong here on Valentine's Day. I get guests on the line, and then we have technical difficulties, making sure everybody's paying attention. We're going to get our guests on the line here in just a minute. Oddly enough, it sounded like you guys could hear him, or could hear the phone, but he couldn't hear his voice. So we're on it. No worries. All right. April Marie here filling in for Sean this afternoon. I think it's impossible. Like, I'm knocking on wood, it's some kind of impossibility to go two whole shows without a little bit of technical difficulties. Okay, I'm going to go back to what's going on in the state legislature while we get Kenneth on the line. As those of you who tuned in yesterday know, or you may know, actually, if you tune into Jeff Bohr Show regularly, you know, I joined 1819 as a fellow. Covering mostly local stuff this year. So I'm covering a lot of what's going on in the Birmingham region. one of the things that I realized is a lot of people don't realize municipal elections are coming up, right? So I want everybody who's listening to this, it's so easy and to pay attention when there's presidential races or even some of the statewide races. You know your state senator, you know your state representatives. Again, later on, we're going to have Chris Pringle on. But those local elections, they matter so much, whether it's for city council or mayor, education. Just I want to encourage everyone in the listening area to take the time to figure out who's going to be on the ballot, who's running for your election, what record they have. This is kind of what I'm spending my days looking into now. And I'll tell you what, even around me, the small towns, looking at what some of these city council and the contempt they show for their elected official or for their constituents, it surprises me. So pay attention. Most people, the just average, ordinary person does not think about the city council until there is something happening literally in their backyard, right? Maybe it's what's happening to me in my backyard where a developer has come in and decided they want to put some monstrosity there. Maybe it's, you know, a business is causing you trouble. Whatever it is, most people don't pay any attention. Maybe they've decided they're going to increase fees or taxes or whatever. But it's a municipal election year, and I want everybody to pay attention to that and get to know what's going on there. All right, we are going to try to go back to our guest here, and I appreciate you guys for your patience. We'll keep him over so that I can get all of the things he's doing with you guys. Kenneth Pascal, thank you again for joining us.
Well, you're welcome. Can you hear me now?
We can hear you now. I don't know what was going on. I could hear you just fine, but the listeners couldn't. So it was an odd thing. But let's talk. As I mentioned earlier, you started your advocacy as somebody who just was at the state house regularly with issues that were important to you, and one issue was most important, and that was making sure fathers get equal access to their children.
Well, that's true, but I will just kind of highlight, oftentimes we say fathers because the data show that in a child custody determination, about 85% of the time, the courts will automatically award the mother custody of the child, and then the father gets 2 to 4 days, sometimes 6 days a month, try to parent their child. But one thing I've seen over the last 5, maybe 6 years, I'm seeing a shift where dads is winning and mothers are losing in the courtroom. And so I just want to just clarify, my focus is to make sure a child has that balanced relationship with both parents. So my bill is not really about father's rights or mother's rights, but more or less the child's right to have a meaningful relationship with both of their parents so they have better outcomes as they become productive citizens in our society.
All right. We're going to take a break here, and I apologize for this this short segment intro. We are going to come back and get into your bill in just a minute. You guys hold tight.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. April Marie here, fresh off my heart attack from my technical difficulties, but I'm still here and so glad to be with you this Valentine's Day afternoon. Valentine's is a great day to focus on family and loved ones, and that's what our current guest, Kenneth Pascal, has been doing. He and you know, I appreciate him emphasizing that what his bill does is looks for what's in the best interest of the child. Thank you, Representative, for being with us this afternoon.
Well, thank you, and I'm just really excited to share about the good policies that we're going to pass this session. So I'm speaking very confident that we're going to get the bill through this year.
Okay, I love that. Now, again, if you're just now tuning in, one of the things the bill's being sponsored this session is tell us the bill number and a little about the bill.
Okay, the bill number is HB 229, and the name of the bill is called the Best Interest of the Child Protection Act. It's a shared parenting bill. But before I dive into the bill, I just want to take about 30 seconds to share why we need this bill. Currently in Alabama, approximately 40,000 of our kids, their parents go through a divorce or a separation, or the child is born and the parent is married. So about 40,000 kids each year have to go through our court system. And we have a law, public policy, that allow the judges to award custody or pick the best parent, what they call it. 85% of the time is mom gets the majority of the time with the child, and then the father would get maybe 2 to 6 days a month with the child. And they call this the best interest of the child. The problem I have with that is the data we have, it states when kids have limited time with one of their parents, they account for 63% of our youth suicides. They account for 71% of our substance abusers, 85% of our youth in prison, 70% of our school dropouts. They're four times greater at living in poverty, and the list goes on and on. And we have quite a few bills in our legislature right now to deal with these issues, from gun violence, drugs, behavior problems in our schools. But we have to ask ourselves, what's the common denominator in each instance? And oftentimes it's the child dynamic for us in the household, as far as having no structure or limited time with one of their parents. And so if we have a policy that promotes this, I think we should look at a policy to change that. So my bill is designed to not to mandate 50-50 parenting time. That's the propaganda we hear about my bill. My bill would not allow anyone dealing with domestic violence to have custody of their kids. It doesn't change the existing law. What my bill does is just create a starting point in Alabama when parents go through a divorce or separation. Instead of an automatic every other weekend for one parent, it will require the courts to try to maximize the child time with both parents. And then work from there, go either direction. You know, there's 19 factors the courts look at for as far as drugs, the distance between the parents. And the last factor is any other thing the judge may determine. So we don't want to take away the judge's discretion. They still have broad discretion. He is creating uniform guidelines. Madison County is already doing this. We have a couple of judges throughout the state is doing this. But the problem is your zip code or where you live at as a child should not determine whether you have a relationship with your parents. My bill is just trying to create a uniform guideline to promote that we believe that a child deserve to have a relationship with both their parents unless there's justifiable reason.
Well, and I think that's a big caveat, is a lot of people will say, well, you know, there's going to be circumstances where the child's in a better situation with more time. But you're saying, all things being equal, what we know, and I am a firm believer of this. I know you and I talked about it when we met. I am a single mother, but I have no doubt that every single child not just needs and deserves the opportunity to have a mother and a father figure in their life. And knowing that there are just things, and you know, yesterday the House passed the bill on defining a man and a woman, knowing that there are inherent differences, and any parenting book you ever read will tell you there are inherent differences between the way that someone mothers or fathers or men and women interact with children and the lessons they learn and all of that stuff. My kids have a phenomenal uncle And their uncle tosses them up like they're sacks of potatoes. And he tells those boys to treat us girls well. And there's just an inherent genetic difference in the way children interact with male and female. And I think it's important that you're asking the state to recognize that.
Well, it is. And, you know, we keep talking about gun violence. I wrote an op-ed about 3 months ago, and I asked a simple question. What are some of the common denominators in these cities that we've seen this increased violence in? And it comes back to the family structure. We have to acknowledge there are both mothers and fathers that bad parents, you know, understand that. But those should be looked at as exceptions because they are. But we used to have two healthy parents, and for some reason they decide to go their separate ways. That is traumatic for a child. And then we have a policy that make it more traumatic by saying you have to lose one parent or deny one half of your identity. And so it just really paralyzing our communities, particularly, well, all communities, but as a person of color, I'm going to highlight, I think it's having a more drastic impact in the community, in the black communities. But God, he created order regardless of the skin color that a child do best with both parents. And my bill is just simply asking the courts to start as each case, start the conversation there. Don't start with how to limit the child time. Yeah. No, how to start maximize the child time. Yes.
Yep. And that makes absolute sense.
And April, regarding presumption, I received several emails from the domestic violence different groups. And I just want to highlight my bill is for healthy, loving parents.
Right.
We have a current policy dealing with domestic violence that is a presumption is not in the best interest of a child to be with abuser. And I support that 100%. My bill is absent of that. Let's look at how to maximize the child time with both parents.
Well, I appreciate that. Now, let's talk for just a brief moment before we run out of time here. Let's talk about you have another bill that that you will be bringing that is a part of the ALGOP, Republican Party of Alabama, legislative priorities. And I pulled that document up after we talked a little bit earlier. Part of that bill is a DHR Transparency and Accountability Act. And this is something you're working on with stakeholders, because we have seen both the need for DHR to protect vulnerable kids from abuse, but we've also seen where government bureaucracy has overstepped in recent years. What's your bill looking to do?
Well, my bill is just creating transparency and protecting parents' due process rights. And so my bill is, it's not going to give parents due process rights. We have those already. It's going to make the requirement DHR must notify parents of their due process rights. So if you get a knock on the door, they basically is going to give you a information handout just saying that you have the right to allow them in your household. You have a right to refuse them in your household. You have a right to record the conversation. So basically just laying out the parents' due process rights, and it's requiring DHR employees, they must be trained before they undergo or participate in the investigations. And it's going to require that they notify the parents of the administrative review. If they disagree with the outcome, parents already have these rights. You're just making DHR put it in writing to make sure that each parent is informed of their due process rights. Once again, creating uniformity. We have some of the best child protective policies in the nation. The problem we're seeing, they don't follow their own policies sometimes. And so this is going to kind of help with that, but also help de-escalate situations by making sure parents understand they do have due process rights. And at the same time, we want to highlight again, we do need DHR, but we got to have that balance as far as protecting parental rights and then government intervention.
All right. Well, I appreciate that. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, they want to tell you their personal stories and help you with your with either piece, either bill, how do they do so? Where can they find you online or email you or contact you to tell you their stories?
Well, they can call me directly on my cell phone, 205-626-9458, or they can email me. And the best email is my Gmail account at votepascal@gmail.com. That's VOTE, then PASCHAL at gmail.com.
All right. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to call in today. I especially appreciate your patience as I worked through the technical difficulties. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. And thank you so much for what you are doing to protect the interest of kids and families in the state of Alabama. Incredibly important work.
Well, thank you.
All right. That was Kenneth Pascal. He is a state representative and advocate for keeping families intact, making sure those kids have access to mother and father. Back in just a minute with more Midday Mobile with April Marie.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. April Marie here. Whew. What a wild first hour. Always glad to be here on this Valentine's Day afternoon. If you are just tuning in, this is your reminder. If you did not get your loved one a Valentine's Day gift, do something thoughtful. Do something caring. No appliances, no household cleaning devices, none of that good stuff. It doesn't have to be chocolate or candy. If your loved one's been wanting to see a movie, you can get it. If your loved one has a favorite store, go shopping there for a minute. Get something personal. Get something thoughtful. Maybe call one of the 106.5 sponsors. Check those out. All right. Valentine's Day reminders from April Marie. I'm just imagining in my head that Jeff Poor also did Valentine's Day reminders throughout his show. Just, I can imagine it now. All kidding aside, great to be back with you guys today. I do have the text line open, so keep those messages coming. Woke up this morning to this headline: Alabama state agencies, nonprofits raked in $7.5 million in federal grants for migrant education and housing in 2024. Looking through the list, this is the top story trending on 1819.com, by the way. Looking through the document, the one thing that sticks out at me, and these numbers, you look around us here in Alabama at the needs of our communities, and the numbers are staggering. One of the numbers goes to something we talked about with here on this program a couple of weeks ago when I filled in, which was $1.9 million for the Alabama State Department of Education. That is for migrant education. And we talked about a little bit about this, the needs of teachers, the needs of our schools when there's a community and suddenly they get a influx of non-English speaking children. And those children go into our school system because they're over here. And again, frequently, illegally, it's a very, very different circumstance if someone has come over here legally. But we're talking, I'm primarily concerned about the cost of Biden's open border policies and what that does, because here we are looking at these numbers again, total of over 7.5 million, but that's not the true cost, because the true cost of open borders, the true cost to Alabama isn't just the number. The true cost includes the learning experiences of the children we have here. If you are live in Alabama, you maybe your family is from here, you're from here, you went away to college, came back, you went to a trade school, and you work in your father's business, or you start your own business, and you send your kids to school, you are primarily focused on your child getting a quality education in a safe environment with a curriculum that is telling them the truth, not teaching them lies and ideology. But you're also wanting a particular experience for your kids. You want them to be able to go to the classroom, there to be limited disruptions, both whether it be behavioral, whether it be, you know, something that's going to take away the teacher's focus. And we've had communities throughout Alabama where all of a sudden just a large number of illegal immigrants have come through. They've been placed in the children are placed in a school, and suddenly the kids who had a learning experience or were going to have a learning experience that would allow the teacher to meet those needs. Now the teachers and the schools and the administrators are having to focus on the needs of these non-English speaking students who are in a different place, in a different atmosphere, adjusting to all of the changes that come with relocating and all of the changes that come with, you know, coming across the border and their parents being put through a system. It's really more than just a dollar sign. We can't put a price. We can't say what the cost to the students who are in a learning environment that has been overwhelmed by non-English speaking students. We can't put a number on that. We just absolutely can't. And so I look at this and I see that there's dollar signs here for housing. There's dollar signs here for the Department of Education, for healthcare, the Medicaid agency. This is 1.2 million, almost 1.3 million for refugee cash and medical assistance from the Department of Health and Human Services for refugee resettlement. Well, here's what we have learned in the Biden years. It used to be that that refugee status was few and far between, that you knew that somebody who was coming here for refugee status really was a refugee. But under the Biden administration, we had NGOs, we had agencies, we had people out there telling individuals how to apply for refugee status who don't qualify for it. I mean, they had written, honest to God, written words on paper of these are the things you have to say to qualify for the status that you maybe don't qualify for. And so it's frustrating to me because in our immigration system, which is and has been wholly ineffective and broken for a very long time. But because of the years of Biden, we have seen it's going to be much harder to figure out and undo the mess he did. And as I look at these numbers, as I look at this 18-19 story, as I look at the grants that have come in, $4 million to an Alabama nonprofit for housing that the Department of Labor sent. But I look at this and I think to myself, we've got a problem. We've got a problem because we have to move people. We have to send people back. We have to figure out who lied, who told the truth. We have to figure out who's with them. We have to figure out all of those other things associated with illegal immigration and those wrongfully claiming statuses that they shouldn't have. And then we're going to have to look at what's happened in our schools, look at what's happened in our communities, and recover from that. It is, to me, it's heartbreaking. We have, and these kids aren't going to understand. The kids who were in the classrooms or their friends are going to disappear. The kids who are in the classroom but have to go back where they came from. It is traumatic for kids. And it's traumatic for the school system and them having to staff and change staffing to meet these needs and then having to unring those bells and focus back on the kids who are still here when the dust settles after Holman and Trump do what they can to make sure that our nation is safe and that our resources are being spent appropriately. All right, you are listening to Midday Mobile with April Marie. I appreciate you for sticking with me during our technical difficulties in this last hour. Remind you again, Valentine's Day. Make sure you got something special for your loved ones. If you want to send me a message, I'm sure the guys didn't collect messages. If you want to send me a message about what you have done or ideas for your friends and fellow listeners, feel free to do that. I am on the text line. Back with more Midday Mobile in just a minute.
There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, you're banned.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
That never gets old. I laugh each and every time. By the way, part of that play-in says no loud cheering or clapping. I love the loud cheering and clapping. You guys are so kind on the text lines. One listener earlier was encouraging Sean to take away an hour of Jeff Poor to give to me. And while I don't encourage thievery, I do love the sentiment, which is that you guys enjoy when I'm on. So thank you for that. Happy Valentine's Day to those who are just tuning in. For shame that you missed the first hour. But that's okay. We have a phenomenal second hour lined up for you. I will be joined here at about 1:15-ish with State Representative Chris Pringle. I think the first year of marriage is newlywed. So I'm going to call him our local newlywed legislator. Chris will be on to talk about some of the bills. He's got this legislative session. And I want to talk to him a little bit about the success that's happened in the state for a bill that he passed last year, a bill that I was watching in terms of the, and I spoke to it a little bit yesterday, the increased penalties for those who are dealing drugs that have fentanyl and kill people. Fentanyl is a very scary drug, and it has changed the dynamics. To me, it's changed the dynamics of the warnings we have to give our kids in terms of even experimenting. I know it is something people do. I don't, because I was an absolute square. That's how old I am. I was an absolute square in high school. No, I was an absolute nerd in high school. I actually spent my days volunteering at a combination of the local police department as a police explorer and then at a senior center. But I will say that I wasn't one to experiment, but I know a lot of people who did. And, you know, trying drugs should not be a death sentence. And so I applaud the efforts he did with that. But we're going to talk about some of his other bills, and then we'll talk about the redistricting mess that is still happening. I had a couple things I wanted to get to this afternoon. I talked a little bit about the cost, the costs are so much more than the dollar cost for illegal immigration. And I'm still incredibly grateful that Trump and Holman are addressing that. And it's really nice to see as Trump's appointees, committee, whether it be cabinet heads that are confirmed or whether it be additional appointees, as they are named and go through the Senate, it's really nice to watch them get to work. I mean, there was such relief to know that FEMA was focused on reallocating money and reallocating resources to Americans that were hit by storms and hurricanes and dealing with, total devastation of their houses. And FEMA should have been more prepared, and FEMA should have done everything they could to prioritize these American cities, these homes that were wiped out. And instead, their focus was elsewhere. It was on the comfort and security of illegal immigration of immigrants. And that just aggravates me. And it's nice to watch the Trump administration day by day in these early weeks just refocus and reprioritize. Now, is Trump trolling in his, are there people in his administration who continue to troll the left? Yes. And while that's not my favorite thing, I have come to appreciate it more and more as, especially as the Biden administration, we watched them use lawfare to go after not just Trump, but anybody associated with Trump so frequently over the last 4 years. Now we're seeing a change. Now we're seeing, as I mentioned earlier, the Associated Press being shut out of meetings. I don't celebrate an infringement on First Amendment rights. I don't celebrate a decline in news coverage, but I do celebrate that some of these people are getting a taste of their own medicine. And to me, after 4 years, I'm hoping an equilibrium comes and things quiet down, but I'm not going to lose sleep tonight on the AP whining and complaining because they don't like that they weren't allowed in a couple of meetings. Nope. Not after what they've done to us. Not after what they've done to our nation. Not after the just absolute lies they've told. One of the things I was excited to see the Trump administration quickly get behind is the Trump's Department of HUD, the Housing and Urban Development, they quickly said that they are no longer going to allow men in women's domestic violence shelters. This is something that the Biden administration was very clear about, that they were going to not, that they wanted to allow men who identified as women in these shelters with abused women and children who were seeking safety and were trying to recover from violence in their lives. Stories. There was a story in Ontario of a man, trans, they called him a trans woman, but we all know it's a man, who crawled into bed and assaulted a female resident at one women's shelter. The Trump administration has said no more domestic violence shelters, homeless shelters, anywhere where it's supposed to be a single sex space. They're not going to have this. And as I watch these kinds of common sense policies be brought back, I hope two things. One is I hope Congress figures out in their funding budgets how to make sure that that this continues. I hate the idea of every time we get a new president, every time the pendulum swinging so significantly that we literally are going to have four or eight years of sanity and then back to the crazy times. I want Congress to step up and step in and make sure that it's laws that protect women. I talked yesterday to Susan DeBose about this. One report coming out this afternoon showing that the Federal Department of Education spent just tons of money on propaganda, on DEI propaganda that argues that black children must start, quote, decolonizing the mind, end quote, from whiteness, capitalism, and individualism. White people, especially anti-woke whites, do not have permission to accuse BIPOC, people of color, black indigenous people of color, I believe is what that stands for, of being racist. This is what was going on. This is what has been going on in our classrooms, K through 12, in our universities across the country. And I hope that more and more of these materials become public because I think across the board, it's nonpartisan, the idea that none of this garbage belongs around children. None of this garbage is going to ready anyone for the workforce. There's been study after study that says if you tell people to look for ways in which they're victims, they're going to find them. All day, every day, if you're looking, spending your whole day looking for, and I put this in air quotes, even though you can't see it, microaggressions, you're going to find them. So frustrating. Thrilled with the progress that's been made in this short amount of time. We're going to come back, switch gears from my federal observations back to the state level with State Representative Chris Pringle in just a minute. You guys hold tight. Back in a minute.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Good afternoon, everyone. April Marie here, filling in for Sean today on this Valentine's Day. So pleased to be joined by my next guest. And it's so funny because I've known him since my first session going to Montgomery advertising. I was advocating for smaller government, stumbled upon him at a, forestry association event. And he was just Representative Chris Pringle, but now he is Speaker Pro Tem Chris Pringle. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, April Marie. Let me give a shout out to my beautiful wife, Laura, and my sweet mother.
Very, very thoughtful of you, especially on this Valentine's Day. Now, I mentioned earlier, the first year of marriage is newlywed year. Did you go all out as your first Valentine's as a newlywed?
I am taking her to probably the nicest restaurant in Mobile tonight, and I gave her a present last night.
There you go. Good job. We got to make sure we have our priorities right. I want to hear all of the important things you're doing legislatively, but most importantly, I need to know you're treating your sweet bride well, which of course I had no doubt you were doing. Let's get legislative session off with, it seems to be quite a lot going on in Montgomery this first couple weeks. Tell me what is your, as you look at the first weeks, let's just say your first impressions.
You know, it's been a very productive week. We got through, we've passed all the sunset bills so far, which is, yeah, is good to do. It's the renewing of licensing boards. We had to change a few of them, bring them up to code, make a few changes, but we had a good week. We're going to start addressing some of the crime package, I believe, started coming out of the Senate, and we ought to see it in committee next week. So it's been a good first two weeks.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about some of your legislative priorities, bills that you have filed. One of them now, well, and what we'll go to, one of them is something that individuals are getting at gas stations. Tell us about your bill to protect families against Galaxy Gas.
Yeah, Galaxy Gas is unregulated, and I don't know how they're able to do it, but these gas stations are selling it, and basically it's nitrous oxide, and it deprives your brain of oxygen and brings on a feeling of euphoria, but it's very, very destructive to the brain when it's overused. We had an instance of a person driving somewhere in the state of Alabama, and he was sucking on Galaxy Gas, passed out, ran off the road, hit a tree, and killed his passenger. Mm. There are people, their lives have been destroyed by this stuff. You can easily buy at the gas station. You know, it's what I call the drug dealers constantly are finding new ways to sell products that are very destructive to people. You know, we had a problem. We banned Kratom years ago. It was being sold at gas stations. Then we had to go ban synthetic marijuana. Now they've got nitrous oxide. And I'm going to tell you, there's another bill about this, Delta 8. Delta 8 is completely unregulated. When you go into those vape shops, there is nothing to regulate those people. They're back there mixing chemicals, putting them into a vial, and then taking it out front and selling it to your children. And you have no clue what you're heating and then ingesting. That's been heated up and vaporized. And it's the wild, wild west. And people we've got kids that are ODing, having to go to the hospital on this Delta 8 product. People having to go to the hospital over this Galaxy Gas. It's a constant battle in the legislature to stay in front of the drug dealers who are pushing stuff that's very, very unhealthy for our children.
Well, and you, this is not your first time looking to protect families against substances that can have devastating effects. I talked to you just briefly and spoke to told the listeners, you know, you had success in increasing the penalties for those who are dealing drugs that have fentanyl lead to deaths. What have you heard since the passage of that piece of legislation?
Well, some of the district attorneys have reached out to me and told me how much they appreciate what I did with that bill. That if you sell somebody a drug that's laced with fentanyl and it causes a death, we can now charge you with manslaughter. And there have been several people arrested and charged with manslaughter now. And, you know, my reports are I think fentanyl is actually starting to fall off because of these prosecutions. And you put a couple of major drug dealers in jail for killing people, people are going to start thinking twice about selling that garbage.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the big issues that the legislature started really talking about this week is efforts to tap down crime in the major cities throughout Alabama, particularly Birmingham and Montgomery. What do you make of those efforts and the speed in which the legislature has taken those up?
Well, we all understand it's a serious problem, but we're going to do everything we can. We're going to give law enforcement the tools they need. We're trying to pass some stuff to help these task force. But the reality is that some of these cities, they're grotesquely understaffed. They won't hire the number of police officers they need. And without the police force out there, it's very hard to stop the criminals or arrest them.
Amen to that. That I know that is a big problem. I've been watching the numbers in Birmingham. They cannot seem to get the police force staffed up the way they need to, and then they have huge retention problems once they do. That is a lot of times reported to be a cultural problems within the police department, feeling like they don't have the support of local elected officials, and it's this cycle that that is just allows the criminals to know they can get away with more than they can. No law or regulation is going to necessarily change and fix that, though. And we're seeing a lot of laws being offered as though they might. Switching gears, somebody asked about the Delta 8 and Delta 9 beverages. Would those are those something you're interested in getting rid of?
Well, again, they're completely unregulated. You've got beverages out there that have like 50 milligrams of THC in them. Or Delta 9, whatever they're calling it. I mean, basically, Congress legalized marijuana a couple of years ago, and it's unregulated, it's uncontrolled. And it's, again, kids are overdosing on it because you can go to the grocery store and buy those drinks. You can go anywhere and buy them. You can go anywhere and buy, you know, the vaping and the gummy bears. And it's very, very harmful to our children. But you're going to probably see some legislation regulating these drinks. And you're going to probably, eventually, we're going to have to start regulating these vape shops because there is no control. They're able to mix whatever chemical they want to mix, put it into a vial, and sell it to anybody at any age.
Yeah, it's frightening to know. Again, you don't know what you're getting drink to drink, you know, vial to vial, however it works because of the lack of regulation and warnings that are available. Talk to me a little bit.
Hey, just real quick, I talked to Senator Nelson the other day, and I said, you know, we passed the bill to have medical marijuana to help people who are sick that need the drugs to help them with their appetite or their pain or their seizures. And those were contained inside of a highly regulated, controlled, you know, environment where it was medical grade THC or Delta 9, THC, whatever, and it was controlled. But what's happened is now you can just go buy it on the streets and you don't know who made it or how it was made. But medical marijuana was simply a medical patch. It was a tasteless gummy bear or it was a suppository. Now you can just go buy these Delta 8 drinks in the grocery store, take them home and mix alcohol with it.
Wow. Well, and yet we still don't have the medical marijuana. They haven't been able to get that together. Is there anything the legislature might do to amend or fix that process or what's going on with that?
Well, I told Nelson this. It's tied up in court and the sides are fighting because it's millions of dollars. And then other people came in and said, well, we're just going to sell these Delta 8 drinks up to everybody. we'll let people basically self-medicate. So the people that wanted medical marijuana can just go buy these drinks, or they can go to the vape shops and buy this Delta 9, the Delta 8 products.
Yeah, it's a lot I didn't even realize was out there. On the flip side of this break, I want to talk to you. We won't keep you too long because we know you have been in Montgomery a lot this week. But I want to talk to you about the redistricting, what's going on with that, and get your thoughts on what may be happening in the courts, even as recently as we speak. You guys hold tight. It is April Marie filling in for Chris Pringle, or filling in for Sean Sullivan. That's the second time today I've mixed up their names. The Speaker Pro Tem, Chris Pringle, on the line. Back in just a minute.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
In for Sean. Somehow I managed to hang up on our speaker pro tem, but got him back on the line. Thank you, sir. You still doing well?
I'm great. Just sitting here in front of my construction site in my truck.
Nice. Very nice. All right. Well, as we went to break, I got a question on the text line asking if your office has received any calls against Governor Kay Ivey's VA bill from membership of his same parish, letting you know that they are opposed. And this is a quote, I'm not calling her this, to Meemaw's bill. Are you familiar with the VA bill that's been proposed, and what are you hearing and seeing about it?
I've received several calls from people that are opposed to that bill. But the last briefing I got before I left Montgomery, the bill's in the Senate. And they met with the major veterans organizations, and they worked out some amendments to the bill. And I was told that the majority of the veterans groups are in favor of the bill now. I know this, that the House sponsor is Ed Oliver, and you will never find a person that advocates stronger in the legislature for veterans than Ed Oliver. And all the other veterans in the legislature that I know are going to support this bill. But I know there's still some opposition, but I don't know what the amendments were or exactly what they did because I had to get out of town yesterday, but I'm sure it will be fully vetted next week when we get back to Montgomery.
All right. Well, I appreciate you taking the time. Michael, I hope that answers your question. You, of course, were the House. You led redistricting for the House, and it has been the gift that keeps giving. Give us the latest update with the challenges to the maps the state has faced and is facing.
All right, this is going to take a minute. Remember the first, when we passed the plan, it went through there was a lawsuit filed against me or the committee before we ever produced the map. They filed the lawsuit and made all the allegations against us. They're going to make it. We drew it wrong. Went to a preliminary hearing for three federal judges. They ruled there's a likely violation. It needs to go to trial. It never went to trial. It was appealed to the United States Supreme Court. And the argument in front of the Supreme Court basically was, it really doesn't matter what our map does. The Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act needs to be overturned. Kavanaugh wrote, had you come up here and argued the case before the court, I would have voted with you, but you chose not to argue that, so I'm having to vote against you. We went back in the session. They told us to draw a map. Went back in the special session, and one of the attorneys that was trying the case got with some of the members, and they decided they were going to ignore the Section 2 stuff and go with a plan that said that compactness of districts means more than Section 2. It infuriated the court. They threw it out. They hired their own cartographer. That person drew what's now the congressional map of the state of Alabama. Now, at the same time the first set of lawsuits were filed, there was another lawsuit filed. I call it the Bobby Singleton case. The court stayed this trial and set the date for February of this year. So there was always another congressional lawsuit floating around out there. But we also had a lawsuit filed against the House and against the Senate. The House, though, the plaintiffs finally withdrew their complaint against the House, and the House no longer has any litigation pending against it. The Senate, however, went to trial back in November. with one of those three federal judges that made the ruling in congressional was the sole judge on that trial in November. She has not handed down a ruling yet, but she's also one of the three judges that's hearing the Bobby Singleton congressional challenge. That's going on. The plaintiffs did their case this week. We expect the defense to come next week. The biggest difference, the lawyers that handled the November trial and the lawyers that handled this trial were the actual lawyers that do reapportionment work. To say, we don't have standing. The legislature has no standing, so our lawyers weren't allowed to go before the Supreme Court or go before the preliminary hearings. We had to rely on other lawyers. Steve Marshall now has allowed our lawyers to try this case. So I think they're doing a great job because they know reapportionment law. It's a very complicated law. It's very, you know, it's very difficult to understand. And the reason why you have this litigation, there's a conflict between the 14th Amendment, equal protection of all citizens, and the special protections afforded under the Voting Rights Act to Black, to African Americans. And that's what the courts can't seem to find, how they balance the 14th Amendment and Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. And that's what all this litigation's over, and they won't tell us how to do it. In 2017, the court ruled against legislative districts and said, you rely too heavily on race, drawing your districts. You need to draw your districts race neutral. So we went back in 17 and redrew all the districts race neutral, gave them to the court. Court said that's what we wanted, less emphasis on race. 2020, we drew the same way we did, race neutral. And then the courts came back and said, no, you have to draw using race almost exclusively to draw your lines. So I'm like, tell me which one. Is it race neutral or is it, you know, dependent on race? I'll do whatever the court tells us to do. It doesn't bother me. Just tell us that. Don't tell us one thing on one case, and then we come back in court next time and tell us to do the exact opposite. It's very confusing.
So, yeah, and the courts ultimately, again, you're getting this conflicting information from different courts at different times. There are multiple maps in play. In the meantime, we've already had an election with one set of maps. What do you think? If I don't know if you're even allowed to speculate, but what do you think ends up happening as these different issues are worked out?
I think what's going to happen, this is just me, Louisiana ran into the same problem we did, and they did the same exact thing in Louisiana. They redrew this map, and they stretched and pulled to create a second majority-minority district. That case was argued in front of the United States Supreme Court in the fall. The court has not handed down a ruling. I am just guessing, and this is just Chris Pringle, that the court, the reason why the court has not ruled in the legislative case yet, and I think they're going to finish this trial and hold their opinion until after the Supreme Court rules in the Louisiana case, because that ruling could directly affect the outcome of both these cases. And I don't think the court is going to want to hand down a ruling that's going to contradict what the Supreme Court's about to release in a couple months. And, you know, the federal court, they're not on the same timeline as us. We're worried about if we have to draw something, we want to draw it while we're in session, we want to get it done, right, get it behind us. They're not all that concerned about it. If we have to go into extraordinary session to draw something, that's they're not going to let
not their problem,
timeline.
Right. They don't have to worry about the cost associated or the inconvenience or any of that stuff.
Exactly. So I think what you're going to see is they're going to hold all these opinions until after the Supreme Court rules in the Louisiana case.
Okay. Well, we will keep an eye out for that. As we wrap up this this afternoon, and I do appreciate your time this Valentine's Day, what is, if you had to say, your top two priorities for this legislative session before you come home to your new bride and your mama, what would you say are your top two things you hope y'all are able to do?
Get the budget passed. We will pass them. Just having to work through that whole budget process. And I'm very happy. I passed a bill this week that put the medical examiner's board under the ethics law. We had a state licensure board, and the employees and the members of the board were the only ones in the state of Alabama that didn't fall under the ethics law. And all the other state employees do. So it was a quirk in the law, and I'm glad I was able to get that through the chamber.
All right. Well, I appreciate that so much. Thank you for taking the time to give us a call today. And thank you for everything you're doing in Montgomery.
Thank you. Take care. Have a great Valentine's.
Thank you. You too. All right. That was Speaker Pro Tem Chris Pringle taking the time out of his afternoon to give us a call. We will take a quick break, and when we come up back, I'm going to kind of summarize, since I have to say goodbye to you guys, summarize some of the top stories of the day, remind you where you can find me online, and answer any additional text questions I get between now and the close of the program. You guys, back in just a minute. You're listening to Midday Mobile with April Marie.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
This 2 hours have gone way too fast. Enjoyed spending my afternoon here with you guys on this Valentine's Day. Kids will be back in about 20 minutes, and then it'll be chocolate hearts and cookie decorating, in case you're wondering what my Valentine's afternoon and evening will look like. That is the plan. I may do a heart-shaped pizza from Papa John's, too. I know. Serious romantic over here, I tell you what. All right. Well, as we wrap up today's program, I want to remind you a couple things. One, you can find me online at APRYLMARIE, April Marie. I say my name so fast. It's a double first name. Southern thing, I suppose. The Y, I have no explanation for. Demerol is my mother's explanation, in case you're curious. April Marie online. I will be filling in for Jeff a little later this month, so you guys will get to hear me again when I come back for that, and I'm sure he will give me the days, but when as we get closer to it, keep an eye out, and I don't say this because I work there and Jeff works there, but keep an eye out on 1819. The shenanigans of the Alabama legislature cannot be discounted, especially when it comes to the Second Amendment bills. There have been just a slew in the name of crime prevention, and I put that in air quotes because it's BS. We all know gangbangers don't follow additional laws. In the name of crime prevention, there has been a remarkable effort to infringe on the lawful Second Amendment rights of Alabamians, and it makes me angry. So keep an eye on that. I will say today, before I get into some of the federal stuff, that there is an effort, and it cracks me up, but there is an effort to create a sales tax holiday, an optional sales tax holiday for guns for guns in Alabama that Yarbrough proposed. It was a 2-day sales tax holiday, and it would run from Memorial Day to the 4th of July holiday, exempting all firearms, ammunition, and hunting accessories from sales tax. And I think this is hysterical. I know leftists are going to lose their mind over it. I'm interested to see what the estimated costs would be, but during a legislative session when the gun grabbers are coming out big, and with the support, by the way, of Governor Kay Ivey and other Republicans, when the gun grabbers are coming out big, looking for red flag laws, looking to change from violent felons being prohibited to own firearms to all felons, including those who had felony nonviolent traffic violations and other, financial-related crimes. I think it's really, to me, it's important to see who steps up. Yarbrough stepped up with this bill, the Second Amendment sales tax holiday. And then, of course, Chris Elliott, I mentioned him yesterday, really stepping up to protect youth. You know, there is a huge difference between somebody on a pistol team or a rifle team, a skeet shooting team, someone who is lawfully exercising their Second Amendment rights, somebody who maybe it's family tradition. And there's a very big difference from the youth around Alabama, in rural areas and in small towns that allow and have teams for this versus the gangbangers in inner cities that we're seeing who aren't going to school, who don't have loving and committed families who are watching out for them, who haven't been taught the basics of firearm safety. Huge difference, and we should under no circumstances have laws that put the safe, knowledgeable, responsible teenagers in the same category as the gangbangers. It just, those committing crimes, those doing carjackings or shootings or other, you know, robberies from Facebook Marketplace, two very different groups of people. And I appreciate and applaud the efforts of Chris Elliott to make sure that those exercising their rights responsibly are not grouped in with the other group, because huge difference. And too frequently, we will see everybody lumped in together. Consequences be darned, and that's infuriating to me. So keep an eye on those gun bills, particularly as and then keep an eye on what's going on in DC. I'll tell you what, as we were on a break, I saw headlines about TikTok being reinstated. I want to remind you, just because you can doesn't mean you should. The Chinese government is as destructive and harmful today as it was yesterday, as it was a week ago, as it was, you know, months ago. And just pay better attention to what's going on around you. Watch the Trump appointments. Watch what the Senate is doing, where Katie Britt and Tommy Tuberville are concerned. Keep an eye as some of these more controversial picks come through. Pay attention to not just, you know, it's really easy when the Alabama delegation all together agrees on something. But I raise an eyebrow when I see differing opinions or see one of our senators taking a stand that the other senator doesn't. You know, watch what's coming out of Washington, D.C. And look, I have been going on and on about all the great things that the Trump administration has done, but it's not all rainbows and sunshine. It's not all flowers and great. Not all promises have been kept yet. And so we want the accountability. We want to know what's happening in DC. We want to know that that Trump isn't making bad appointments. And, you know, just yesterday, maybe yesterday, the day before, we saw where the lawyer who defended the NRA in the case of the NYAG case and was appointed a job by the Trump administration, by Donald Trump. Sarah Rogers is her name. And so just, you know, it's not all the big ones, not all the big names you see and hear, the RFKs, the Christy Noems, the, you know, it's the Kash Patels. There are other appointments that we need to watch out for and keep an eye on, whether they be ambassadorships, deputy secretary positions, all of those things. And so as I prepare for when I do come back and fill in, I'm going to be keeping an eye on those appointments, keeping an eye on what our senators are doing. And on the House, the House of Representatives, we got a delegation there. They control the purse strings, and we've got to watch them and make sure that they're empowering Trump to spend our money in the best way. We need to watch the House of Representatives, which has a very close margin. But we've seen even in the recent weeks, our delegation split on things, and we need to watch and make sure that they're doing what we want them to do. It's really tough because we've got some really good, solid, you know, Mo Brooks was on with me, I believe it was last week when I was here last, Mo Brooks was on with me and he was saying, you know, we've got Barry Moore and Gary Palmer, which tend to be consistent, but then other members of the delegation aren't so consistent on what they're doing to support I don't even want to call it the Trump agenda anymore. It's really the agenda that Americans said they wanted, the prioritizing the spending, the prioritizing cutting red tape, prioritizing putting America first. These are things that shockingly, we've got members of the Alabama delegation that they're not doing what they need to do. And so we need to hold them accountable. The best way to do that, by the way, is if you live in the listening area and you make sure you're writing and calling your congressman, making sure that they're doing what they need to be doing. keep in touch with your U.S. senators, and Montgomery specifically, so incredibly important that you're paying attention to what they do. Things are moving fast there. They move fast, and we it's easy to get distracted with the shiny objects and the big messaging of legislative session, but don't let them do that to you. Don't let them fool you. What is one man's crime bill is another man's infringement on his rights. And that is just, to me, absolute wildness. All right. Valentine's Day. We're going to head out on this note. It's Valentine's Day. For those of you who don't have, you know, a warm and fuzzy significant other, that doesn't mean you can't celebrate. Girls, you've all heard the cheesy term Galentine's Day. Tell somebody you know in your life who's not all partnered up, who tell them that you're thinking about them today. For the guys, again, it's the thoughtful gifts that are meaningful. It's not necessarily the flowers and the roses or the jewelry or the chocolates. You can get creative. I was laughing. C.B. Carl wrote, "I'm blessed with a lady for the last 25 years who thinks that smoked venison hearts is romantic Valentine's dinner." Well, all righty, CB. You found yourself a good catch there. All right. Well, April Marie here. You can find me online at APRYLMARIE. April Marie on Twitter and Facebook. Keep following on 1819 News. I'll let you guys know when I'm filling in. Thank you again for being so kind on the text line. And stay tuned for more of today's programming.